The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the fans here at TD Garden rise to their feet. And they salute the effort from the Boston Bruins as the horn sounds. The Boston Bruins shellack the Pittsburgh Penguins 8-4, closing out the regular season series, going 2-0-1. And they hop over the top of the Toronto Maple Leafs, back in a second place in the Atlantic Division.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Quite a week. New faces, an offensive explosion. Here to join us for the next couple of hours, we've got Judd Surratt and Bob Beers with me here in the Town Fair Tire Studios this week. A little bit of an earlier start tonight. Bruins and Montreal for a 5 o'clock start. I don't think anybody's going to argue over that.
Got to clear the schedule for that big 8 o'clock game tonight.
Is that what it is?
I'm assuming.
That's what I thought, but there's one game that's in that window, but I don't know if it's a game that's going to interest a lot of people. Yeah, it's Arizona against Ottawa out in the desert.
Yeah, the outdoor game, which...
Why?
I don't know. We'll ask Billy, Billy Jaffe when he joins us.
Why the outdoor game, and, and I like the fact that it's at the Naval Academy, but do it earlier in the year.
Right.
You have two
March
teams fighting for playoff position right now. It's March. I mean, do that earlier in the year and kind of get that out of the way.
We'll talk a little bit about that with Billy Jaffe when he joins us via phone, because he is down there working for the NHL Network this weekend on that game. As I said, been a heck of a week since our last show. Obviously, the Nash trade happens on Sunday morning. Tommy Wingles joins the team. Brian Gionta joins the team. All of them have had an impact already in their first game or two or three, depending on which guy you're talking about. And the game on Thursday night in particular, guys, we'd seen coming off the end of that road trip, the team had dipped a little bit. They get a little injection of some fresh faces. They lose Bergeron at the same time, so a lot's been going on around this team. And then Thursday night, you get what Bruce Cassidy and some of the players were calling a little bit of a measuring stick game. You know, you're moving into the month of March, a little more than a month to go in the season, and you've got the two-time defending champs coming into town, and you blow their doors off with 8 goals. I mean, I don't know that even with the game that they played against them earlier on in the year, which was a high-scoring game, I don't know that any of us really expected that it was going to be 5-3 at the end of one and that the Bruins would put up 8 goals on Thursday night.
Well, I think for the Bruins, they came out and they played with some pace. They generated a forecheck and they went to work. It certainly helped that early in that game, I think Mike Sullivan's team had a hard time coming up with some saves. But you wanted to head into that game and you wanted to rectify the special teams. Bruins went 3-for-5 on the man advantage, something that was good to see. And remember, it's a reconstituted unit, not only with personnel, but how you're running it, because Ryan Spooner's now in New York. And the penalty kill responded against the number one power play unit in the National Hockey League. So those were two very good signs. But I think in the bigger picture, Ryan, since you bring it up, David Backes actually alluded to this, you've got to start ramping up and start thinking about the playoffs now. Your game has to start to elevate. It's going to be a rigorous schedule here down the stretch. I think for the Bruins, they want to get everybody involved, and they want them to be as ready as possible once the middle of April begins.
Yeah, I mean, measuring stick, sure. I mean, you go into that game, and you're looking for, I'm not going to say you're trying to manufacture motivation, because you're playing against the Stanley Cup champs, and you're at home, and you should be motivated to play that game. But I'm not going to read too much into, if they lose that game or if they win that game. It's, because teams do have the ability to kind of elevate, as you say, or as David Backes says, once the playoffs do come around, and Pittsburgh's been around. They've done that. No, they didn't get saves early on. And, obviously to Tuukka Rask's admission, I mean, the Bruins didn't get saves early on either. There was a couple shaky goals there early. So, It was a fun game. It was an intense game. I think when Patrick Hornquist threw a hit on Charlie McAvoy, it was kind of game on. Here we go. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of stuff going on. It got physical. It got intense. And, you love to see it because it brings out, I think, a good quality in the Bruins when they're pushed or challenged or, you know, whatever you want to call it, whatever word you want to find. But they played a strong game as that one went on, and it was good to see the offensive outburst because they had been snake bitten a little bit recently, especially on that West Coast trip, you know, where they had some opportunities. I mean, Vancouver for one, they were all over the Canucks in terms of opportunities, and it was all of a sudden Vancouver come back down and score. And there were some bad goals there too, but you know, the Bruins were bad defensively. But so sometimes when you're not scoring offensively, you start to cheat a little bit, and then you leave yourself exposed, that type of thing. The Bruins, it was good to see them get that outburst, and it came from a lot of different places. It's good to see David Krejci get on the board with the hat trick and see him, how energized he is right now.
There's, over the course of an 82-game season, there are some games that kind of feel, that have a different feel to them as far as the intensity that you mentioned, Bob. And you see that, you know, things kind of, it feels like a postseason game. The crowd felt like it was a bigger than
Buffalo
average game
compared to the game against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you know, some of those games mixed in against Ottawa
against
don't
Buffalo
exactly
compared to the game against Toronto the night before.
Yeah, you know, it just had a different feel to it going in. It felt like a bigger game, and it the game itself felt like a bigger game because, as you mentioned, it got physical and it got nasty, and guys were kind of playing on the edge in that game, and that's especially for a team that has some young guys that haven't been through the grinder of the NHL playoffs. That's what they have to expect night in and night out come April.
That may be, but I think once the playoffs begin, as Bob, I'm sure, you know, can speak, you know, much better than I can about it, it's a completely different animal. And for a lot of these guys, while you're playing in some intense games here down the stretch, I don't think that there's anything that can duplicate what they're going to experience once the playoffs begin, especially in the first round, when I think emotions can be really intense and really raw right at the beginning of the playoffs. I think that's where you see most of your upsets is in that first round of the playoffs. But I certainly think it's good for these guys to start to experience what it's going to be like. There's going to be even less room. Every check, every play, every one-on-one battle will be magnified. That's what we're going to be talking about a month from now.
And they're going to have some of these games coming up in the month of March and April, for that matter. I mean, the Bruins are at 20 games to go. 7 of the 20 games are against either Florida or Tampa. Mm-hmm. Haven't played Florida yet. You're going to see them a lot here, you know, over the last 3.5 weeks. Because you don't play them for another week and a half here. In Tampa, you're going to see 3 times. And there's a team that, you know, you got a chance to possibly catch here in the Atlantic Division. And these are going to be pretty good games. Florida's playing some of their best hockey here. Right now. You got the standings right in front of you, Judd. How many points are they out? 1 or 2 out
one
of
point
a playoff
back.
Spot right now? And they've got games in hand on some of those Metro teams, Carolina and Columbus, that they've caught. I mean, they've played some great hockey. They've won 5 in a row. What is it, 10 out of 13? Something like that. So they've been on a really good roll. We haven't seen them yet this year. We were supposed to play them earlier. Of course, that game got postponed to April 8th. But now that April 8th game might have some significance when we're looking back when it got canceled or postponed, saying, oh, it's probably not even going to mean anything anyhow.
Right.
But
Florida won't even bother to show up. They might need it to get in the playoffs.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you're looking at the way the schedule's starting to shake out, and the longer we go, obviously it's easier to see the playoff picture. But it looks like it's going to be a 3-team race, essentially, for that last playoff spot because the Islanders, they got drubbed last night by the Montreal Canadiens 6-3 at home. They got swept, I believe, in that back-to-back series, a home and home. But right now you've got Carolina, who's got that last spot at 69. Columbus, who lost last night in Anaheim, they're at 69. Florida with 3 games in hand, 1 point back. And then you've got the Islanders, who are 5 points below them, and they've played 65 games.
Coming out of that Pittsburgh game, you mentioned David Krejci, the hat trick. I mean, great to see out of him. The Rick Nash trade, bringing him in, and he obviously takes over the spot that Ryan Spooner had been filling on that wing with the Krejci line. We've talked about this in the past, and a lot of people have talked about this in the past, that Krejci seems to be at his best when he's got kind of the power forward guys around him. You know, a lot of people point to, you know, Horton and Lucic when he was playing with those guys, and that was kind of at his best. How much is Rick Nash going to help David Krejci for the rest of this season?
Well, I think, first of all, the quality that both wingers have right now, and I'm talking about Nash and DeBrusk that are playing with him, they both have the ability to get pucks. DeBrusk has been really good at that this season. His ability to use his legs and get in on a forecheck, or even on a back check kind of, and not give up on a play and use his stick in order to create loose pucks and to create turnovers, that puts the puck in David Krejci's hands. You know, that quality about them. And so when you've got Lucic and Horton and players like that, or again, if you could say that, I mean, you know, those are bigger guys who can win battles along the boards. And I think Nash gives them that guy. I mean, Spooner's gone on to New York. He's actually done a nice job with the Rangers, but the Rangers aren't really playing for anything, you know, and it's taken Henrik Lundqvist two nights in a row with 50 plus saves in order to win two in a row. So what Rick Nash has brought is that big body who can hold on to pucks, protect pucks, get them in, you know, and make plays once he's doing that. You know, that has to continue for Rick Nash. It's been three games, and it's been great. You know, don't get me wrong. It's been great. They're a better team with him there. As long as he continues to move forward and push forward and play that way. That's what you want to see from him. And I think David Krejci was generating plenty of scoring chances before the trade. They just weren't getting rewarded for it. They knew they needed to upgrade that position. They went out. They did what they needed to do in order to upgrade in that spot. And that's going to be something that's going to be a real good quality moving forward. You know, especially when you get Bergeron back, and now you've got two lines plus, you know, that third line who, you know, offensively anyhow, that can create goals on any given occasion. You're a real balanced lineup, even with the fourth line. You're a real balanced lineup when you get Bergeron back in there. So right now, and Nash has done a good job. Don't get me wrong, Riley Nash has. But I'm just saying, when you get Bergeron back in there, wow, you've got balance. And as long as Rick Nash continues to play at that pace that he has, because it's been really impressive.
The center's down the middle, by the way, for a lot of the teams in the East. They are pretty tough. It is very deep. But to take Bob's point even further, talking about the wingers that are playing with David Krejci, in talking to Krejci, Spooner when he was here, in DeBrusk all season long, I think part of the, I don't want to say the issue, but part of what that line needed to do a lot more of was they needed to have someone going to the front of the net. So fine, if Jake DeBrusk is digging out the puck and David Krejci's making the play, well, some winger's got to head to the front of the net. Well, now you've got two guys who can do that, not only dig them out, distribute them to Krejci, and then carry to the front of the net. So there's been a lot more net presence. It was David Krejci who opened it up by himself, crashing to the front of the cage. If you look at his numbers right now, traditionally over his career, more playmaker than goal scorer, he's got, what, 14 goals in 44 games. Now, if you translate that across an 82-game season, that's a better goal-scoring pace than you've ever seen from David Krejci in the past. His career high is 23.
He had a lot of goals last year.
Mm-hmm. He's had 23, but that's his career high overall. So you're seeing some terrific offensive production and a burst from Krejci, but that group, they can dig out pucks and head to the front.
But I think he was having some good games prior to that, and they weren't getting rewarded for it. And it was something that was kind of popping, that like that line should have been on the board several times, especially during that Western trip. And they were kind of held off. And then even in Edmonton, they said, okay, we got to move David Krejci around. We got to find a couple of different wingers for him here in this particular game. And it was in Edmonton, and they moved him. Remember, he was playing on the line with Backes and Heinen, and he ends up scoring the game-winning goal. Mm. With a minute to go against Edmonton. But that was a shift in the third period of that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question he's had a solid year. And that, you know, especially when in the past, when he's had to play with younger guys around him, it hasn't always been that way. It almost seemed like there were times when, you know, he wasn't happy to be out there with some of the guys that he was out there with. And he certainly looked happy on Thursday night. 617-779-0985. As we get started here on this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show, Joe Haggerty will join us in about 20 minutes, get his thoughts on all the goings-on with the Bruins, but we'll get into more on the trades, the Bergeron injury, and a whole lot more coming up. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub, and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all here in our Town Fair Tire studios this week. Bruins and Montreal coming up at 5 o'clock faceoff today over at the Garden. As we're talking about the Nash trade, obviously one of the bigger trades made at the trade deadline this year belongs to the Bruins. Spooner, Bolesky, Lindgren, a first, a seventh, You know, when the trade first broke, you kind of look at it and go, ooh, that seems like it seems like a lot. But the more you break that down, getting out from under half of the Bolesky contract is big. You know, Ryan Spooner obviously had to go to make room. The first round pick, you know, with the added benefit that you get from the Bolesky contract, I mean, obviously you're going to have to give up something to get something in Rick Nash, even as a rental. And Ryan Lindgren, you know, I've talked to a few people who kind of, you know the prospects a lot better than I do, and all of them kind of say the same thing, that he'll play in the NHL, but you're not giving up a future superstar here. That, you know, this guy is a, you know, middle to lower pairing type of a defenseman. He'll be a gritty guy for you, but he's not going to be a guy that you're going to regret for the next decade that you gave up on too early.
Well, especially since you feel that you already have that position, the left side, left D, and, you know, I've watched him play a lot in the World Juniors. Mm. You know, last 2 years, actually, he played last two seasons in the World Juniors. He competes. He competes hard. He's got high character. You know, there's no offense there. You know, he's a hard-nosed defensive defenseman, high character, compete type of player. He's probably suited for the bottom pairing. I mean, he'll probably play in the NHL, whether it's full time or not. I don't know, but he's probably going to be a bottom pairing guy. That's what's projected for him. Who knows what happens? But,
sure.
You know, and that's not a slight at all. But that's what he's projected as. You give up a first round pick, it's going to be late in the first round. You got to give something to get something. The Bolesky thing is big for them, I think, because, you know, you trim the salary in half because you're retaining 50% of it. It's my understanding that you can get if the Rangers buy him out, it's even more cap relief for the Bruins.
Okay,
that's my understanding with it. So, I think that there's still a lot of moving parts there, and you know, who knows what the Rangers do with Matt Bolesky? Maybe he's up and down. But I think that
one way or the other, the $1.9 million in savings in the next couple of years with all the contracts that you've got coming up, is you're going to need every cent of that.
It's the Bruins were probably going to buy Matt Bolesky out. So even if it stays status quo, they do save some money over the term. So, you know, it didn't work out here. He had a good first year. I thought a decent first year here, and it didn't work out the next couple of years. And, you know, unfortunately for a you know, hard-nosed competitive guy like Bolesky, I mean, it's too bad it didn't work out here in Boston, because I think he would have been a good fit, you know, had it kind of continued to trend upward. But Spooner... You know, let's Ryan Spooner's been rumored to be traded for a couple years now. And it's telling to me, and I think he had a pretty good year this year. He showed real good glimpses at times.
He was playing as well as I thought he had.
He played pretty well.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree with that. But let's look at where he's at right now. So he didn't play in the playoffs last year after David Krejci got hurt. They made him a healthy scratch.
Right.
In the playoffs last year, after Krejci got hurt, and they brought in Sean Corrali to play, he got a raise in the offseason.
I couldn't believe they protected him in the expansion draft. Well, I thought they would have, you know, been happy to have Vegas take him.
And then he's due for another raise this year, so I don't think that they want. I mean, they've been down that road. It's okay. That's time to move on. And so, hey, good for him. He's doing well with the Rangers. Now he's going to give them a hard decision to make, you know, on how to approach that. But I don't think anybody's arguing right now about the type of player that they brought in. And even if it is a rental, maybe they sign him longer term. Even if it is a rental, you know, you've got a better chance with Rick Nash on that wing to move forward in the playoffs.
Well, there's no question about that. And not only that, but we talked last weekend. I was on.
And that's the bottom line. You look at everything that they gave up too much. You've got a better chance right now to move forward in the playoffs. And you still have a stockpile of draft picks and prospects.
Well, that's it. You didn't mortgage the future for it. Oh. And that's the important thing. You know, we're on the air last weekend when the trade broke on Sunday morning. And, you know, various reactions to the trade. Like, I don't think anybody could really argue that you gave up too much. And at the same time, I don't think anybody can argue that he doesn't give you a better chance to win going forward. So that's great. I guess the bonus to that, to me, is the message that it sends to the room, too. That when you bring in a guy the caliber of Nash, who is a rental player, this is not, you know, making a deal for McDonough where you've got another year, you know, on the contract. This is a guy you're bringing in for the short term, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do going forward. I think it sends a good message to the room that, yeah, we believe that we can go deep in the playoffs here, that we do believe in this team. Anytime you make a trade of this caliber at the deadline.
I think that most teams that have Stanley Cup aspirations, and there were a number of teams, including the Bruins, where ownership and management felt that same way and wanted to give a vote of confidence to the guys in the room. And so they went out and they made the transactions, picking up four different guys. But I think going back to Rick Nash, and I think this goes for any player, while I would love to think that you could send a bag of pucks to somebody and get a world-class player in return, it doesn't happen. If you want quality, you're going to have to give up some quality. The Bruins certainly did that in that transaction for Nash in particular. But this goes back to the way that organizations draft and develop. If you do a good job drafting and developing, and I'm talking as you get into low first round, second round, third round, you create assets and trade chips for yourselves. You have a wealth of defensemen that are in the pipeline. You trade O'Gara, and you send them a prospect in Ryan Lindgren, who's a heart and soul player and probably a 4, 5, and 6 at best in the National Hockey League. But it gives you the opportunity to go out at the deadline and make these deals, much in the same way that Steve Yzerman did picking up Ryan McDonagh.
617-779-0985. Let's squeeze in a call here before we get to the headlines. Maria in Watertown, you're up on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hope you're all well today. That was a fun game on Thursday night. I was in the building, and I don't know when I've enjoyed a game as much as I did Friday night. And for those who are criticizing the Bruins or not giving them credit for the win because Pittsburgh was the goaltending, whatever, a win is a win. They took advantage of all the weaknesses and buried the team early on. So I'm very impressed with that. Also, love the Rick Nash trade, and I think even Milan Lucic made some type of remarks indicating that, you know, now that David Krejci has someone like Nash on the line with him, that they can be almost as, you know, probably as dominant, if not more so, than that line was back in 2011. But quick question regarding Tuukka. Do we have to start worrying about the Tuukka tired syndrome at this point? Because, you know, he did not look good in that first period, by his own admission, and he's had some hiccups in prior games. And I know Joe wrote something to this effect, and he got destroyed on Twitter as a result, but he's absolutely right. Do we need to worry about the Tuukka tired syndrome, gentlemen? Have a great day.
I appreciate the call, Maria. 16 goals allowed over his last 5 starts. He's hit a little bit of a dip in his game recently, but so has the team. You know, the end of that of that trip did not go particularly well. So, you know, is this just a hiccup in what has, you know, otherwise been? I mean, he's been one of the best goaltenders in the league for a long time here this season, while this team has been on an unbelievable run. So,
how many goaltenders go through their entire season without any,
yeah,
as you call it, hiccups?
Yeah,
I mean, how many?
None.
All right, so he's not tired because he's had proper rest.
Right.
So he's going through it. He is going through a period right now where he needs to get himself out of it. And I'd rather see it now than later. So, you know, I don't read too much into it. I really don't. He's going through. He's got to work himself out of it. Every goaltender goes through it, and he's got to get himself through it. There's been a couple of games. Vancouver specifically, that was just awful for the team and the way that they played. The one against Pittsburgh, he allowed some bad goals. There's no question. He needs to be better, but it's not because he's tired. That they've given him the proper rest, you know. So it's just that's on him. He's got to figure it out, and it's on the team in front of him to be a little bit better in certain areas as well.
And he had a good response, I thought, in the second period. There were certainly some head scratchers in the first. There's no question about it. But it's the way he responded. He stopped Phil Kessel on the man advantage over at the far post when he goes left to right. At that point, the game is still hanging in the balance, even though the Bruins had the lead. Kessel scores there. All of a sudden, it's an infusion of life, and you got a hockey game on your hands. He also made a stop on Carl Hagelin after there was a scramble. He had to get back to the front of the
net.
Yeah,
well, he kind of created that, didn't he?
He may have. But he stopped the puck, but he cleaned up his own mess.
One of the more unorthodox saves.
Cleaned up his own mess and stopped basically everything he should have from that point forward. But I think for Rask and I think for everybody here, it's going to be about how he performs once the playoffs begin. But he's played 42 games. We'll see if he gets the start tonight. Bruce Cassidy would not name a starting goaltender for tonight. We won't know that until about 4 o'clock.
He's right on his number. Yeah, he's right where they want him to be. So, you know, now it's on him to be better.
All right, Marshall Hook's going to give us Sports Hub headlines. Joe Haggerty will join us in studio next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Now joined in studio by Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston.
What's up, Ray? Maria? Must be nice to have the full
It is. It's always nice to have
here. Everybody here. It hasn't happened in a while.
So Maria Watertown actually had something complimentary to say about you today.
Well, she usually does. Maria's a fan. I like Maria.
She doesn't always agree with you.
No, but usually she does. She reads, and that's all we can really ask, is that they read and consume what we produce and enjoy it as hockey fans, and she certainly does that.
All right. Well, you have some concerns about Tuukka Rask?
My thing was, is it time to start getting concerned about Tuukka Rask when you start putting together the evidence of things? You know, 888 save percentage over the last six games, has allowed 3 goals or more for the last 6. You know, has had a couple of rough games in there. You know, we've seen this down the stretch from him before. I don't know if everybody felt this way, but you get that feeling when you watch him in the middle of the season go through a great 2-3 month stretch that you know at some point that's going to kind of end. And, you know, what are you going to have after that's over? And, you know, where's his game going to be at as you're going really down into the stretch and into the playoffs? And as Beersy said, you know, they've given him enough rest. Anton Khudobin has stepped up and done above and beyond, you know, the call of being a backup this year, and has put them in a great position with the way that he's played, as far as where Tuukka Rask his games played, as far as needing, you know, those kind of wins from your backup to be a playoff team. Like, he's done all that. So, you know, he's just got to answer the questions now and get his game back together down the stretch and going into the postseason. And he's got some stuff to prove. Certainly, I feel like he does to you know, to himself and to the fans out there of finishing strong and having a really good playoff. And, you know, it remains to be seen where we're going to be at. But as Judd said, it was good that he responded after the first period, got his game together there, and you know, they won. And it didn't get any worse than after the you know, some of the goals he gave up in the first 20 minutes.
And as he said, he didn't have to hop on a flight back to Finland and disappear after the they had lost that one.
He also said he wished he would have rather have been in the stands having beers than actually playing in that game. So I don't know how to take that. I mean, it was a funny line, but like,
he had some beauties. He said he had a Red Bull between periods and all of a sudden picked it up, made some saves.
Maybe he's making a few bucks from Red Bull these days, Judd. You know,
well, happened before the game then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where was it before the first period, right? Maybe that's the adjustment that needs to be made. But, like, look, he's got all the talent in the world. He's in a perfect place as far as the rest they've given him, the team that's playing in front of him. Like, this should be the year where it all comes together for him. He plays really strong down the stretch and has an excellent playoff where he can be the goalie that they need. But we're going to have to see it. You know, he's still in, like, show it to us mode, you know, right now this season.
Big picture, if you're a numbers guy, big picture. Of any goaltender in the league that's played, well, he's played 42 games, all right? Any goaltender in the league that's played as many games as he has or more, he's got the lowest goals against average in the league. And Marc-Andre Fleury's just a tad below him, but he's played 32 games. So he's played 10 less games, and there's nobody else in front. Carter Hutton's played 29 games. Yep. He's got a bit of a lower one, but everybody else is just behind him. Just looking at it right now, you know, Pekka Rinne's 2.32, 47 games. Vasilevsky's 2.34, 53 games. Hellebuck has had an outstanding year for Winnipeg, 2.40. Tukaras is 2.27.
So, and Hudobin, I think, is right around there, too, right?
But I'm talking about guys who have played a lot of games. Guys who have played the majority of their games. The starting goaltenders.
But I guess my point is that you feel like the goals against, especially, it's the goalie and it's the team in front of him, obviously.
Sure it is. And it goes hand in hand. And when you're playing like you did against Vancouver and you play against like you did against Colorado earlier in the year, no goaltender is going to be able to stop that. Maybe you get a couple games where Henrik Lundqvist makes 50-plus saves. He's the first goaltender, I think I read this morning in history, to make 50-plus saves on back-to-back games and get wins out of both of them.
Yep.
You know? When your goaltender's your first star every night,
means your team's
in trouble.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Seriously. I mean, there's a lot of holes in your team. And that's, I firmly believe that. I mean, your goaltender can steal you games, there's no question. But if he's the first star night after night after night, your team's got a lot of holes.
Okay, speaking of that, we'll kind of lead into that. Trade deadline. We had talked previous to the deadline about some of the holes or some of the deficiencies in this team. How did Don Sweeney do? Obviously, Nash trade jumps off the page at you, especially the way he's played in the first few games. But Tommy Wingles, Nick Holden, Brian Gionta, you can add him in there, even though he wasn't a trade, but a signing. How did he do filling the gaps?
I think he did great. I think he did. He gave this team everything that they should or could need to go on a run in the playoffs. You know, he got the compliment to David Krejci, the big-bodied power forward that can finish and turns that, you know, second line into a real offensive threat and something where you're not going to be able to key on Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak in the playoffs and just try to shut them down and know that nobody else is really going to be able to hurt you. You know, the Krejci Nash combo together, you can already see it. I mean, it's amazing how the chemistry has just been immediate for them from the first game that they played. And you know, the thing about Nash, I guess, that's really impressed me is that not only can he finish plays and he's a scorer and, you know, he's a big body in front of the net and all that stuff, but the defensive side of it and the complete player that he is and the things that he does at both ends, I don't think I realized how good a hockey player he was doing all of that stuff. And I think you've seen it already in the first few games, that he's just going to be a really big factor playing with Krejci. So you got that guy on the second line.
He's been doing the things at the defensive end, whether it's killing penalties and being out on the ice in the last minute protecting a lead. Like, he's done all that for the Rangers. Where he gets judged, though, and where he ultimately has to, and he's got that, but where he has to continue to he's got to produce. I mean, that's why he's there. That's why he's got to be a threat every night.
He's had five shots a game in all three games that he's played. If he continues to do something like that.
He's just got to be a threat at creating chances either for himself or for his line mates, and that's what you want. And then going to the front of the net, he's just rescored the power play goal the other day on the nice pass from Torrey Krug. I mean, that's something that he will go to the front of the net, and he will be there. That gives them two bodies in front of the net. I think when Bergeron comes back, I know that Backes and Nash are on the same unit right now on the power play, but you know, Bergeron comes back, that gives him a body in front of the net on each power play. You know, quality big body there who doesn't mind going there and making plays there.
But not only does it, you know, Nash obviously brings his own game, but like, he unlocks David Krejci's game too. David Krejci looks like he's kind of been let out of jail a little bit to a degree, just like having that guy that he's always been comfortable with, Nathan Horton, Milan Lucic, Jerome Iginla, having that guy in his wing brings out the best in Krejci and allows to him to be the player that we've been seeing that's so good, you know, in big games and in the postseason and all that. So it really helps everything there. But to get to your point quickly, Judd, before you go all off on the next subject, you know, I think all of the bench players that they got, the reserves, he got people at every position. You know, he got a center, Don Sweeney, he got a wing, he got a defenseman, to be able to come in if the rookies can't really, you know, do their thing or if injuries happen. And he shored up the depth everywhere on that roster in addition to getting the player in Nash as well. So he's checked all the boxes. You know, I think this trade deadline has been his best by far, and he's done everything at this point to give everything the team needs to go forward. And I think that's been impressive.
A couple thoughts. First, on Nick Holden, you got a guy who is versatile, plays left, can play the right side, can kill penalties, can play on the power play, made a great play the other night, which helped set up another David Krejci goal on the man advantage. So you've got some versatility there. As you mentioned with Rick Nash, can play well all over the rink, can kill penalties, can be on the man advantage, can head to the front of the net. The other thing with Rick Nash is I don't think he is burdened in the same way that he was in New York, being the guy with the big contract who's expected to lead the way up front. Here he can fold into an established core that's won a Stanley Cup with some big-name players. He's there to assist you to get over the top. He's not supposed to be the guy who gets you over the top and to the promised land. And I think that's different. He's excited to be here.
And I almost likened that, and I wrote about that when he came to Phil Kessel in Pittsburgh, where he was similar. Like, he was never supposed to be really or fit to be the guy on any of the teams that he was on. But you put Phil Kessel with the Pittsburgh Penguins, where he's, you know, fourth, fifth best player, third best, whatever you want to call it. But the expectation of him being the best guy in the roster isn't there anymore. He can just go and play his game and do his thing without all that pressure on him. And all of a sudden he flourishes with the Penguins, is great, you know, behind Malkin and Crosby and everything else. And I do think Nash is the kind of guy that can do the exact same thing with the Bruins, given the cast of characters and the great talent that they have here.
All right, Joe Haggerty is joining us in studio. We'll continue with him. We're also going to give you a chance to win some tickets to Tuesday night's game against Detroit coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, joined as well by Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. And right now, caller number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to Tuesday's game for the Bruins against the Detroit Red Wings. Select tickets are still available at Ticketmaster.com. Again, 617-931-0985. Caller number 10 gets two tickets for Tuesday night. Patrice Bergeron's foot. Let's talk a little bit about that for a moment. Gets hurt Saturday night.
Yep.
There was a report that he was seen on a walking boot leaving the arena on Saturday
night. It wasn't just a report. He was in a walking boot walking out of the Air Canada Center. I was right behind him when he was walking out.
But he comes back and plays on Sunday because, you know, he's Patrice Bergeron. And, you know.
And it was pretty clear watching him on Sunday when he was getting ready for the game before. He was kind of walking around gingerly. You could see him really looking at it and testing it out on the ice. And, you know, it was clear that he was hurting in that game on Sunday.
But then they say this week, all right, going to sit him down for a couple of weeks and we'll reevaluate him at that point. The fact that he played on it on Sunday gives me hope that it's a fracture, obviously, so... Yeah, but that it's not.
But can you judge normal standards by Patrice Bergeron?
Not by a guy who's
superhuman
played with a punctured
tolerance
lung.
For pain standards. I mean, he's on a whole nother level with being able to play through injuries and pain and everything else. And not only is it impressive on one level, but it sets the tone for everybody else on that team as to what the expectation is, which is fantastic.
So I've seen some people, and I kind of had the same thought this week when they announced it was. Look, if Patrice Bergeron's going to miss a couple of weeks in March before the playoffs start, I'm pretty okay with that, actually. As long as the team can keep its head above water here over the next couple of weeks and not go into a tailspin, which they haven't in the first couple of games, then I would rather him maybe get a little bit of rest here as they get ready for, you know, what we hope is going to be a long postseason.
If this is going to happen, you want it to happen 6 weeks before the regular season ends and not a week or two before the regular season ends, you know, because he's going to have the time to come back, get ready for the postseason. He is going to have a rest in this period where the rest of the team is really slogging through this month of March, you know, with 16 games in 31 days. The real downsides, as I see it, to this injury are, A, he's out for the Hart Trophy conversation now, which is too bad because I think he would have been in the mix and would have been in the discussion if he hadn't missed the time, you know, amidst his best NHL season. And B, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to catch the Tampa Bay Lightning now missing him. And, you know, obviously they're going to play them three times and they'll get their shot, but it's going to be more difficult, you know, depending on how much time that Bergeron is going to miss here, the degree of difficulty goes up. But, you know, given the playoff cushion they have, given the games in hand they have with Toronto, where I think, you know, home ice in the first round is still very much in hand for them and attainable, and the rest that Bergeron's going to get, I think there is some upside to this kind of injury. And, you know, not only for him, though. Bruce Cassidy's talked about veterans and young guys are going to get their rest here down the stretch going into the postseason, and that's just part of the benefit of this cushion that they've built up over the course of the year.
And look, you know, we've kind of pointed to this on the schedule for, you know, since the schedule came out that it's going to be light at the beginning, but when you hit that calendar turn into March, It's going to be pretty hellacious, and it got worse when they added the Florida game at the end.
Yes.
So, you know, look, I'm really interested to see how over the last month of the season here Bruce Cassidy does handle things as far as who gets a game off here and there. You know, look, if a guy gets hurt, obviously that's one thing, but you're going to have some, you know, maybe some of the veterans where you say, you know, maybe you sit this one out. Maybe
it's not just injuries, too. Everyone's kind of dealing with something right now.
And right, everybody's got a nagging thing,
and in
thing,
Bruce
right?
Cassidy's words, Matt Grzelcyk is dealing with a little something right now. Convenient timing is the way he phrased it the other day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and an opportunity to get Nick Holden into the lineup. If guys have, you know, minor injuries, if Noel Achari is nursing an injury, which, you know, by the way that he plays, he's going to be nursing a lot of injuries.
Yep.
He's going to be banged up. You can afford to give him some days off because you have that depth in your lineup right now. And that's one of the reasons he went out and did it. Donnie Sweeney went out and did it. And instead of drawing on guys with limited NHL experience when it comes crunch time and the playoffs do start, or even in the stretch run here, now you've got veteran guys to plug in the holes, and Wingles and Gianta and Holden and those areas. Everybody wanted him to swing for the fences with Ryan McDonagh. Hey, I would have loved to have seen Ryan McDonagh in the lineup. There's no question about it, right? And that's something that still has to be addressed in the future. But right now, they filled a need on that back end on the left side in case guys are nursing injuries on that left side, because they had nobody to plug in on left defense before they brought in a Nick Holden. So if somebody got hurt. So now they've got that luxury a little bit with some numbers here and NHL players as backups. And it's not to slight some of the Providence guys and guys who have come up and done a nice job. But they'd like to leave some of the prospects down there and leave them alone and let them play and have a good run down there.
And you can already see the qualified NHL players that they brought in here making impacts in their first games with the team, and you can see what they're going to bring to the table, whether it's Gianta, whether it's Holden, whether it's Tommy Wingles, and you know, you can see how much better this team is going to be, have those guys to step in case something happens, or potentially, you know, really push some of these rookies to be as good as they can be, or the guys that they might displace in the lineup. I mean, the competition and the depth part of it are both great things going down the stretch and into the playoffs here. And you know, it's funny, and I've heard other people say this. It seems like everything, or almost everything, that Don Sweeney and Bruce Cassidy are doing right now, the buttons they're pushing, the strings that they're pulling, is working and working tremendously well for the Bruins. And I think that's a really good sign for the team.
Thanks. Thanks for coming in.
You got it, boys.
Good to see you. Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. He will, of course, be covering the game today, as will Judd and Bob. We'll get into a little bit of that coming up in hour number two. Talk more about what we've seen here over the past week, both on and off the ice from the Bruins, as we continue and get to your calls coming up as well. 617-779-0985 here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers will be joined remotely by Billy Jaffe coming up in about a half hour. We talked, obviously, in the first hour a lot about that game against Pittsburgh the other night. We talked about the Rick Nash trade, which was kind of at the forefront, one of the bigger moves made by anybody at the trade deadline. But a couple of the other names have popped up, but I want to get a little bit more in-depth into the depth pieces that have been added to this team. And we've already seen them pay some dividends here over the course of their first game or two or three. First off, Tommy Wingles. This is one of those deals on deadline day where a lot of people go, huh, what, who? And, of course, it turned out that, well, Patrice Bergeron's dealing with a broken foot, so certainly adding some depth and a guy who can play multiple positions up front is going to be valuable for you.
Not sure, Ryan, if it wasn't the reason why they did it.
Well, right. I mean, because
not that he's going to, you know, take Bergeron's place or anything, but he's going to give them some depth at the center position.
Right.
You know, I because that happened after the Bergeron injury was.
Right, they hadn't announced it publicly, but
right.
They knew he had a problem with
his foot. I'm assuming it had some bearing on it. I
mean, sure.
I would think.
Already has 2 points in two games. What does he bring to the table as far as depth and experience? Because, Bob, you mentioned earlier, you know, maybe some of the guys in Providence, but when you're going into a stretch run and you're going into the playoffs, would you rather rely on guys who don't have any NHL experience or a guy who's been around a little while?
Yeah, and I think that that's a lesson that they learned last season. And look, I mean, it depends on the player, right? Charlie McAvoy had no NHL experience and came up and played extremely well in against Ottawa. Sean Corrali had very, very limited NHL experience and came in and did a really nice job. So, you know, it depends on the player, but I think with Wingles, you're getting, you know, and Judge certainly saw him in preseason or whatever when he was with Chicago still, but he's, you know, he has been around for a while, whether it be with San Jose and Chicago. He works extremely hard. I don't know how many points he's going to get. He's not here to get a lot of points. Sure. He's here to fill a role. And that's something that he's capable of doing, whether it be that penalty killing role and be the hard work and be kind of a gritty guy and finish his hits and that type of thing. And character, you know, I mean, I think that that was really big and high up on the Bruins list. If they were going to make changes to this team or add to this team, let's put it that way. Brian Gionta, you know, exudes character and you know, personality, and it's at least in, you know, what he's able to bring. And he's a high character guy, highly respected type of person. And if they're going to bring people to add into this locker room, they had to have some of that quality about him. There couldn't be any red flags. And I think that that was one of the things that they addressed there.
For Tommy, he's a versatile player, and coaches love that versatility. You know, right now he's
already played all three forward positions.
Right. Right.
In two games.
And Tommy had a phenomenal season with the Blackhawks. Granted, you know, the numbers may not bear it out, but for the guys who watched him night in and night out, he had a terrific year. 7 goals. I know it doesn't sound like a lot and 12 points, but he was playing a meaningful role in limited minutes.
But that's
for the Blackhawks.
More, that's what he is. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to score 20 goals
for
you.
No, high energy, high character, high level of versatility, can play on your penalty kill. Noel Achari's name was brought up. Listen, the way Noel plays, if he happens to get banged up, this is a guy who can fill in on the
you
right side.
You could see
side.
Wingles or Gionta playing that fourth line right wing if something happens, I'm saying, you know, and or whatever, if there's a dip in play. I mean, you know, you just bring a little different element to that side if need be, or playing up. Right now he's playing that third line role, and who knows what the lineup looks like tonight. We won't find that out till later. Mm-hmm. It sounded like Holden was going to stand on defense, but forward wise, you know, Achari didn't take the ice yesterday, nursing something. You know, and he, like I said, he's going to, the way he plays, I think he missed some games earlier in the year, not that long ago, only a few weeks ago, you know, nursing something. So, you know, it's when you get the you know, bumps and bruises along the way here that are a little bit more significant than the normal bumps and bruises, you've got the ability to sit some guys down and give them a little rest.
And I talked to Tommy, and he is very excited about this opportunity. You know, to get an opportunity to go deep into the playoffs, maybe win a Stanley Cup. He went to the Stanley Cup Finals with the San Jose Sharks a couple of seasons ago, ended up playing in 22 games.
Went to the conference finals last year.
And
I don't know if people realize, if he played
against
the
Bruins. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So he is focused and ready to go. And remember, he's a guy also on a one-year deal. You know, he doesn't necessarily know what his future is next year. My guess is that he would like to get another contract in the National Hockey League. So he's another guy that is incentivized to play well.
Yeah, never a bad thing, right? You know, these guys who are coming to the end of their contracts and looking to either stick around or get paid somewhere else is often pretty good motivation one way or the other. All right, so Gionta is an intriguing name. You know, when I heard about that last weekend and people were starting to float his name, obviously he had not played in the NHL this season. He goes over, plays in the Olympics, and it's like, all right, here's a guy who's, you know, 39 years old, and he's, you know, he's trying for one last run. He's trying to, you know, he wants to get back in the league, and he doesn't cost anything, right? I mean, here's a guy who's got tremendous experience. As you mentioned, Bob, he exudes leadership. He's a former captain in the league, and he comes in here, and look, it's a chance to try to, you know, add to your trophy case here, if nothing else, and If it doesn't work out, if he doesn't have anything left in the tank, it doesn't cost you anything. It's, you know, it was a no-brainer to me to try to bring him in here and just see what he's got.
By all accounts, he had a number of offers after last season or coming into this season, mm-hmm. and he turned them down because he wanted to play in the Olympics.
Right.
So he wanted that opportunity, and if he had an NHL contract, he would not have been able to play in the Olympics. So he stayed away from the NHL contract. He played some in the American Hockey League on an AHL deal, and he ended up, you know, going and playing, and good for him. And you know, and now he's coming back. You know, now you've got the ability, okay, to see what teams are kind of in it and see what teams are a good fit for you. It all kind of came together. I don't know if he's going to get, Wingo's had 2 points in his first game. Gionta had 2 assists in his first game. I don't know if that's going to happen from game to game. Probably not, but depending on the opportunity and the ice time and whatever, but you're going to be able to give some depth there.
But
depth
I also,
and character.
And I think we all have to keep in perspective how much the new guys have produced and how valuable they've been here in the early going. It's a small sample size. We've got a lot of games that are be coming up, and these guys should get a decent opportunity to play between now and when the playoffs start. But I think for a guy like Gionta, you can see how useful he can be out in front of the net, playing the man advantage, being able to bring you some energy, being able to skate on the right side.
Make it smart plays.
Yes. Absolutely.
It goes a long way. Close games.
Don't turn the puck over the wrong time. Don't do anything to take your team out of the game. In relation to that, as we talked about guys kind of moving in and out of the lineup here and giving guys these opportunities, Danton Heinen sat out Thursday night, has hit a little bit of a rough patch. Bruce Cassidy talked about the other day, we still trust him, but he's not winning as many battles as he had previous. He only had 1 point in the last 9 games.
It was an assist on David Krejci's game winner from Edmonton.
But Cassidy seems to have had the Midas touch when it comes to these guys. When he sits a guy down, when he's had to bench a guy, or when he's had to put him on the ninth floor for a game or two, when they've come back really strong.
And I would agree with that with DeBrusk. Carlo's been mixed bag. Mm-hmm. So, that's on him. That's, he's got to play himself out of it. And I thought he had a much better game against Pittsburgh, especially as that game went on. And he's shown some flashes of it, but he's still trying to play himself through it. So, the instant change, or is it kind of a delayed change where it takes a little while still to get your game back? Regardless, your point well taken. Yes, and you can do that with some of the younger guys, and it's a matter of how they take it. I said that when it happened with DeBrusk. If you go up there and pout, that's one thing. But if you go up there and you watch a game, maybe you watch it with, and it's something that we asked Bruce Cassidy about in our interview with him the other day. Look, okay, Danton Heinen goes up and sits on the ninth floor. Who's he sit with? How does he watch a game? Is he up there eating popcorn, or is he up there watching the game and seeing how, left wingers, different things that you might see from the ninth floor that you might not see at ice level.
Sure.
Are you talking the game through with one of your assistant coaches or somebody within the organization? And I think that that's really valuable when you, it doesn't have to be the whole game maybe, but maybe a period or two, and you sit and you kind of talk through some things and because you can watch all the video you want, but then you get up and maybe have a different perspective of it. But it's how you handle it. How do you come back? How do you play once you get back in the lineup?
And he's saying the right things,
yeah,
Bob.
Sure,
not to cut you off, but for Heinen, one of the things that he talked about yesterday is it certainly makes you a lot hungrier watching the game from up there. Okay, how does that translate if you're back in the lineup? Because it certainly sounds like, after being at practice yesterday, that it sounds like he is going to be back in the lineup. How does that translate? Going back to Brandon Carlo. Now, I understand the Bruins bombed the Penguins 8-4, but I thought that was one of the best games that he has played all season long. He played with some authority. There was something behind the checks. There was something behind the shots. There was a commitment level that was there that was slightly higher
than I felt we had seen. As the game went on, I thought there was a play in behind the Bruins' net in the first period, and it was him and Crosby. And you go into the corner with Crosby, he's going to battle you. I mean, that's one of his best qualities. He works to get pucks, and he's going to be hard to play against in that situation. And there were a couple little jabs or cross checks back and forth, and Crosby gave him a little shot. And, I wanted Carlo to turn around and give him a shot back. Say, hey, and he didn't. Okay. But then the second period, he got locked up with Malkin in behind the net, and he gave it to Malkin. And I don't know if it was consciously, maybe somebody said something to him, maybe he took it upon himself, whatever it is. But you go into the corner with these star players, Malkin's a big body. Crosby's as strong as they come on pucks. I mean, you've got to be hard on them. You have to be hard on them and show them that they're in for a game. You know, that's something that, you know, when Adam McQuaid plays against Crosby, I mean, he's mean with him in front of the net. And, you know, he goes at him pretty good in front of the net. And that's, you know, Kevin Miller and Jara and guys like that. I mean, they have to play them hard. They know that they have to be hard on those guys. You still doesn't guarantee success, but you still have to show them that, you know, we're not. It's not going to be an easy game for you guys.
There was a greater level of conviction in his play. And Torrey Krug had mentioned yesterday that the guys in the room made a point of pumping his tires, getting him ready for that game, and maybe part of that translated in what we saw against the Penguins.
All right, jump aboard with us here, 617-779-0985, as we continue on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Rest the right pants in. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Brian Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you until 11 o'clock. 617-779-0985 is our number. Let's go to Vinny in Revere. You're up next here on the Hockey Show.
Hey, boys. What's going on?
What's up, Vinny?
Love the show. Listen, just a couple points I wanted to make and then wanted to hear some feedback. First of all love all the pickups that we made. You know, I think people don't realize how important, like, the Gianta signing is and the leadership of someone who played, you know, not just Olympic hockey, but obviously a long career and stuff. And when the playoffs come, I think you're going to need the leadership aspect. But just watching the game against Pittsburgh, I think when the playoffs come, what I remember mostly from 2011 is the corner battles in the offensive zone, you know, winning those puck battles in the corner and circulating the puck. I think the Bruins did an amazing job, you know, circulating the puck from the point down, you know, behind the net and just constantly getting it on the next open guy's stick to get the next shot. I think that's super important. But, you know, just the Bruins got a lot of games coming up. After tomorrow's game, I mean, tonight's game, we only have 2 days off, and then it's back-to-back for the rest of the season. So just your thoughts on what the next couple of weeks are going to, you know, put on the team for, you know, having that many games.
I appreciate the call, Vinny.
Well, you'd love to see the energy that you saw the other night against Pittsburgh. I don't know if that's going to be a reality going forward here because of the rigorous schedule and as many road games as the team is going to play. But go back to what he had mentioned about winning board battles. And I think the Bruins as a team are very good along the wall. But in addition to that, yesterday it was winning puck battles, getting to pucks first, going tape to tape, generating shots, generating some net presence in the offensive zone. And I don't care what goalie was in there. Yes, Matt Murray would have made a difference, but they terrorized the Penguins.
Yeah, they there were some ugly goals early. I mean, there's no question about that one. But it's Pittsburgh is a team that, I mean, hard to criticize a team that's won two Stanley Cups in a row here. You know, so they know how to do it. They know how to get it done. And this was a regular season game. And so, you, like I said, you don't read too much into it, but you'd rather be on the winning end than the losing end at this point. But I will say that they've made some changes, and Judd, we were just talking off the air about some of the changes that Pittsburgh has made and some of the guys that they've left, some of the glue guys that have left that team, you know, whether it be Kunitz or Bonino and guys that filled important roles for them, and Ian Cole just got traded on the back end. They are really good offensively. They're a really good team at creating turnovers with their speed when they don't have the puck, but when they're forced to play, especially below the top of the circles and in their own end, you know, you can get to them and you can create a lot of scoring chances, I feel anyhow. And I think a lot of people would agree there that's where you have to beat the Penguins. You know, you limit your own turnovers and then you win some of those battles in the offensive end and you attack the net in those situations. And that's how you get to Pittsburgh. You try to overpower them in their defensive zone because they want to go. Mm-hmm. And the more you play in that end, the more they start to kind of cheat a little bit up the ice because they want to go. And, you know, if you can do that against them, you can do that against a lot of teams. But if you can do that specifically against them, you know, you can have some good success.
You know,
and you still have to be strong at your own end. You still have to be strong in the special teams, that type of thing. But I'm talking about 5-on-5 play. Their 5-on-5 play this year is not good. Pittsburgh's.
Mm.
And I'm talking regular season, so playoffs are a different animal. But the 5-on-5 numbers for them, they're not good. They're the number one power play in the league.
I was just going to say that. I mean, their special teams have been tremendous, and that was one of the, you know, the keys. I heard you prior to the game on with Felger and Maz talking about how, you know, the Bruins special teams had hit a little bit of a rough patch here, and then you're coming in against Pittsburgh, who has a tremendous power play, and the special teams found it the other night. They played much better in both aspects of that game.
I think if you check with your feet against the Pittsburgh Penguins and you stay out of the box and you keep that power play basically on the bench, you're going to give yourself a much better chance to win. But I'm just thinking about some of the changes that Pittsburgh made from last year's team that won the Stanley Cup. No Cole, no Daly, no Bonino, no Cullen, no Kunitz. I mean, we're talking about the interior guys that really log some meaningful minutes. Yes, they're not high-end star players for you, but these are guys you win with. They're not there anymore.
Going back to that Pittsburgh game and the point you made earlier, Bob, about being tough against them and having to be physical and tell them this is not going to be an easy night.
Interesting that they traded Ryan Reeves, too. It's the reason that they brought him in was for games like that.
Right. I wanted to make mention of a couple of things that stood out in that game from that perspective.
Hornquist hit.
But not only the Hornquist hit, but McAvoy coming back, like taking a number and coming back later. I mean, you know, this is obviously he had the overtime game winner the other night as well. And I mean, we know what he brings offensively. But I think the value that he has in the physical, you know, for a guy who's not huge.
Well, he's strong, though. Yeah.
He's a strong physical player. He's willing to, you know, to take the hits, and he certainly can dish them out.
Yeah, and you know, his willingness to, you know, understand that and then come back with a physical. He knocked him flat on, you know, his back later in the second period, Hornquist, I'm talking about. And he's taken some hits this year. You know, McAvoy has. I mean, he's taken some hits and because he's when he has the puck and he wants to make a difference, but... Yeah, the competitiveness is really kind of shown with him, you know, as he's gone along this year. I think he's always had it. It's just, you know, you see that physical side of it. He's not going to take that hit laying down. He's going to come right back. And, you know, he had a pretty good carve in his nose there. And for people wondering why Hornquist didn't get suspended, I mean, my guess is that McAvoy was kind of leading a little bit with his head. I mean, there was no question it was contact to the head. And if he's standing straight up and there's contact, main point of contact is the head, that's a different story. But because he was leaning forward, I assume that's why. But I didn't read anything, but it certainly looked that way. Much like when Marchand got hit by Provorov earlier this year, he was kind of leaning forward with the head. So if you come to hit somebody and they're leaning forward and their head is there, that's the first poor thing that's going to get hit. Hornquist, though, I mean, he plays on the edge every game, and you better play him hard. You know, whether it's in front of the net or whether it's in the corner. And you don't hear a lot about him because of the Crosbys and the Malkins and Letangs and players like that. But Hornquist is a tough guy to play against because he's always in your face. He's always yakking. He's using his stick. He's trying to draw penalties on Chara in front of the net for, you know, he'll go down. He'll run over Rask, which he did, which was not penalized. He gets under your skin in a big way. And they need somebody like that, but, you know, you can come back at him and come back at him hard, which I loved what McAvoy did.
You can argue that that's one of Jimmy Rutherford's best moves when he traded James Neal and got Patrick Hornquist back, won a couple of cups with him, wasn't able to do that with James Neal. And for me, Charlie McAvoy, it's a three-guy race, basically, for Rookie of the Year in the National Hockey League with McAvoy, Brock Besser, and Matthew Barzal. And for Besser, while he's had a terrific year with 29 goals in 61 games, he's playing on a team that has no expectations. None whatsoever. Matthew Barzal is an electrifying player. There's no question about it. He's got 67 points in 65 games, but he's not seeing the top checkers every night. John Tavares is. Josh Bailey is. He's not. And I think that matters. Charlie McAvoy is playing on the number one pair for the Bruins. He's seeing the top end guys with Chara every single night. He by far leads all rookies in ice time. Granted, you know, forwards are not going to play as much as defensemen. I think Barzal's playing about 17 and a half minutes per game, which is still a pretty healthy chunk, and he's a good player. I don't want to take anything away from that. But what Charlie has done, playing against top guys every single night at both ends of the rink, to me, he's the Rookie of the Year in the National Hockey League. My guess is, because of the points, I think the voters are going to be skewed, and they're going to vote for Barzal, but it's McAvoy.
One other real quick thing. Chara drops the gloves against Oleksiak, and I said, I'm not sure Oleksiak's ever been the smaller guy in a fight before, because he's, 6'7", something in that neighborhood. But Chara was on the ice for a full penalty kill almost 3-minute shift and then ends up dropping the gloves after that. I mean, again, I kind of have to keep reminding myself, like, this guy's over 40. Like, I mean, that's superhuman just to, you know, to have a shift that long and then to get in a fight afterwards is, I mean, is kind of insane, really.
Yeah, and I mean, I said it at the time, if he, he's totally under his rights to walk away from that. And it might have been the smarter thing to do.
When you've been out there at the end of that shift, yeah. Right? Like, you can.
But what he did was, I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, you're out there killing a penalty. You're out there for over three minutes total.
Those are hard minutes, too. Like,
exactly. Yeah. He was in his own zone for most of that time. Yeah. I mean, those are hard minutes. It's in the middle of the game. He had already played a lot more than Oleksiak in that game. And then you drop the gloves with him. And like you said, Oleksiak's not a small guy. And he's a huge guy, actually. But, you know, that's... I mean, that's pretty impressive what he did. And he's 41.
Yeah.
Or is he 40? 40, 41, whatever he is. I mean, does it matter anymore?
Yeah.
And in a game that's intense and it's physical and it's already picked up that physical tone, and Chara was hammering away at Hornquist, was just the thing I was just talking about. It was during that power play sequence. Hornquist had come through the crease and kind of made contact with Rask, and then he came to the front of the net, which he always does. He went down a couple times trying to draw a penalty there on Chara, kind of cross-checking him down. And it was at the end of the power play. They're still inside the defensive zone. It's the second period. They can't make the line change. And Oleksiak came out, and he was down deep in the zone that time, pushing and shoving and looking at him. And they went. And that's just, I mean, it says a lot about him in a game like that against the Penguins. It's starting to get ugly. It's starting to get physical and intense. And more than starting, it had been. And somebody comes calling, and I say it would have been more within his, well within his rights to walk away from that and maybe do it at a later time.
Right.
And it just wasn't in his makeup, and he dropped the gloves. And he doesn't do it often, but you know when he does, it's been kind of at the right times I've seen.
All right, let's get to Sports Hub headlines, and then we will be joined by Billy Jaffe coming up next. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. And now joining us on the phone this week is Billy Jaffe, part of the Nesson Bruins broadcasts, and today part of NHL Network coverage of the Stadium Series game, Toronto and Washington. What's going on, Billy?
Good morning. How are you guys doing today? It's a beautiful, brisk, breezy day here in Annapolis.
Yeah, seeing
better there.
Yeah, seeing weather reports that it's going to be a little windy tonight, huh?
If I had hair, it would be very bad hair day. Yes, it would be. It's going to be breezy. I think it's going to temper itself just enough, fellas. They're hoping during the day, they're saying it's regular 25 to 27 mile per hour winds. You know, it's a bowl stadium here. It's called Jack Stevens Field at the Navy football stadium, but it's protected a bit. They're hoping after about 5 o'clock it gets down into the teens, and then they're saying that on the ice it could be only a few miles per hour once the glass is put back up. That's the biggest concern. They took all the glass down because it was whipping around way and bending way too much yesterday during the windstorm here.
So are they going to have the team switch ends because of the wind?
That's the assumption, Judd. We just, you know, at 1:30 there's going to be an update from the NHL. Neither team has skated on the ice yet. They've had indoor practice yesterday for obvious reasons. And the teams are each holding media availability here in the next few minutes. And then around 1:30 is going to be an update. If I was a betting man, which I think we all know I'm not, that I would say, though, that there's going to be teams switching ends in the third period.
We were talking about this a little bit earlier about, you know, look, this is kind of an important game. Like, you know, Washington's getting pressure from behind in the top of the Metro Division. Obviously, we know all about where Toronto stands in the divisional race as well as it relates to the Bruins. So, you know, playing an outdoor game under potentially subpar positions is not ideal in March.
No, it's not. But this is the, you know, both organizations and the NHL understand that, you know, this is the risk I think that you take when you put on an event like this. Both teams, you know, talking to them yesterday, I only got a chance to talk to Toronto since Washington practiced at their practice rink, but
Both teams seem to be okay with it. They understand and the spirit of the thing. It's a beautiful venue. I know that doesn't supersede the value of the points, but both organizations and the NHL are really into this event, and they're hoping that it becomes a fair playing surface for an important game.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of what's been going on around the Eastern Conference. And one of the teams that the Bruins are going to see this week is Philadelphia. They've made a lot of noise in that Metro Division. You think back to earlier on in the season, they had that 10-game losing streak, I think it was, and Hextall's job might have been in jeopardy. And now they're only a point back of Washington in the Metropolitan. How do they turn things around?
Well, you could make the argument that Ron Hextall, his statement after that aforementioned losing streak, his statement coming out and saying Dave Hextall, his head coach, is not going anywhere. Numerous people in Flyers Nation were calling for his dismissal. That vote of confidence, legit vote of confidence, may have turned around helped stabilize their season. Now, that's the off-ice thing. On the ice, you're getting great performances from the top guys, Giroux and Couturier, they've been really invested, but in both 200-foot games. But a guy like Sean Couturier, he has been really, really good for them. They have found that by splitting up lines at times, then putting the big boys back together, it's worked. And I don't know about you guys, but I've become a much bigger fan as I've gotten more ability to watch him regularly of Ivan Provorov. He has been. He's a great young defenseman, and he's helping lead the way. Actor, nice move by their GM to go out and get Mrazek, by Hextall to get Mrazek, a team that needed it desperately. I still don't know if it's going to, be enough for them. I think they'll make the playoffs, but I think they're a good team. I don't think they're a great team just yet, RJ.
I do like Ivan Provorov. I think he's a terrific player. When you talk about Philadelphia's resurgence, and I agree with you on Ron Hextall not canning the coach. That's a guy in Ron Hextall who understands the history in the National Hockey League. And I think if Mr. Snyder was still alive, I don't think he would have had that opportunity. I think there would have been a coaching change, and Philly would have been back exactly where they have been here for the last 10 or 15 years. But I think it circles back to the core group. When the Bruins were in Philadelphia for that afternoon game, the core guys looked completely disinterested for the Flyers. Those guys have turned their games around. Jake Voracek is a name that we haven't necessarily mentioned. He certainly played a lot better. And Shane Gostisbehere, after floundering last year and having some difficulties early in the season, he's got it going again.
He sure does. He's a dynamic defender, and it's more on the offensive side of things, no question about it. He's slight frame, but he's a real good skater, beautiful skater, and defends with his feet better now. And it's part of that maturity. He had a slippery slope in his second year, but maybe, the sophomore slump can be real, right? I mean, last year wasn't great. This year, he's been really good, John. He's been real good in the last couple of especially the last couple of weeks, and he's been a major player too, a major participant with the awful shooting down in Parkland, Florida, because that's the area he's from. So it's meant a lot to him too to, be involved with that, and he's been very public about his support.
Billy Jaffe joining us from down in Annapolis, where he's covering the outdoor game tonight. Tampa Bay has been one of the best teams in the league, if not the best team in the league throughout this season. And at the trade deadline, they add one of the most prized guys who was on the block in Ryan McDonagh. How much of a difference do you expect him to make for an organization that was already at the top of the heap?
I think health being, assuming health is fine, and it should be next week when he comes back. I think he's going to make a nice difference for them. I do. You already love Victor Hedman, and I'm a big Anton Stralman fan. I always have. I'm not sure he gets enough publicity or credit for how good he is. But I think when you add a guy like Ryan McDonagh, who's not going to have to play 25 minutes a night, he can play 20, 21 minutes. He can be utilized in beautiful, second matchups. RJ, I think it's a big difference. You have three defensemen that you trust the heck out of. Dan Girardi has done a nice job down there this year, too. He's limited in some of his abilities. But think about it. Him and McDonagh as a pair, they know each other from New York. And, if that's the way that they go, I think there's going to be familiarity. I think the McDonagh trade, I don't know if it was the 11th or 12th hour by Eisman. It was pretty close to it.
on trade day. I think it was a beautiful move. I do. I think it really solidifies this team as a big favorite.
While we're on the subject of teams down in Florida, mm-hmm. the Panthers popped up. We mentioned that a little bit earlier today. Florida Panthers have made some noise here and are only a point out of a playoff spot with three games in hand right now against both Carolina and Columbus, who they're battling for that second wild card. Where have they come from?
They've come from not obscurity, but close to it. A lot of people felt that they were a lot better than they had shown early on in the year. Remember, both of their goaltenders were hurt for a while. Now Luongo's back, Reimer. I give Reimer credit. He did better than I thought he would in the long extended absence from Roberto Luongo, had the lower body injury. I think that this is a team, it starts with Sasha Barkov, a player. I think I'm going to assume the hardcore Bruin fan is knows that name. He's almost a carbon copy of Anze Kopitar of the LA Kings. He's going to win a Selkie. There's no doubt about it. In probably sooner rather than later, he's a beast of a man. Long reach, left-handed shot that can do it all for them. I'm a huge fan of Vinny Trocheck. He's got a great shot, another centerman that they have. Their nucleus down there, Trocheck and Barkov and Huberdeau, it's pretty good. They absolutely messed around. They screwed around with the hockey gods last year with their ownership that did the whole firing of Dale Talon and Gerard Gallant, that whole debacle. And they screwed up. It was a pretty good team, I thought. Now they seem to have gotten it back. And I think one of the big reasons is that they've got themselves, the ownership has allowed hockey people to do the hockey thing. And it's taken a while, but Bobby Bugner, their new coach, seems to have gotten them straightened out. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. We haven't seen them much because of the whole snowstorm. Whenever that was, a month ago or so. So now the Bruins, you guys are going to see them, and we're all going to see them more. And I'm looking forward to seeing them. They're most likely, if they're going to catch anybody, as you said, the point behind right now, it's going to be for a wild card. Good for them. Good for them. Good effort.
In addition to that, though, I think the other guy is Aaron Ekblad, who's really elevated his play. Last year was a difficult season for him. Yes, ownership and management threw a grenade in the dressing room. This 2 years ago, this team was a playoff team.
Yeah,
they were a playoff team. But, they decided to – they wrecked themselves last year. And who knows if they're going to make the playoffs. They still have a ways to go here. Yes, they're putting themselves in a position for a shot. But if they don't make it, you have to go back and talk about the moves that they chose to make last year. But Aaron Ekblad – very quietly has rediscovered his game. 13 goals, 27 points. A guy who won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he's been good. He's been real good. He talked an awful lot in the offseason with Chris Pronger about getting some insight how to rebound from the concussion that the concussions that Pronger had and how to deal with them, and also just to do certain things with his game, how to be better away from the puck, etc. Yeah, I think he's a horse, and he has had a hell of a second half season.
All right, so the Bruins take on Montreal, 5 o'clock face-off today. They saw them, 3 times in a week, right? Or thereabouts, back in January, and the Bruins ran the table, winning all three of those games. Anything significant changed other than, some guys that have been moved out of Montreal since then? Should we expect anything different today?
No. Well, no Carey Price.
Right.
I believe that Victor Mete got hurt last night.
He did. And he flew back to Montreal. The question is whether or not Max Pacioretty is going to play tonight.
Okay. So there you go. I mean, otherwise, no, nothing new. Now, they kicked the Islanders' butt the last two games. What a debacle on the island. I mean, the last few weeks. Just an embarrassment. Not getting anything out of their stars. And maybe all the Canadians. No, back to your question. Nothing different. No, I mean they're not playing their starting goalie. They're missing a lot of their big time players, and if Pacioretty can't come play, then there you go. That's even another big game player for them.
All right, Billy, we'll let you go on that. Appreciate the time, and enjoy the rest of your time down in Annapolis.
Gentlemen, have a wonderful day. Thanks for having me on.
See you, Billy.
All right, he is again part of the NHL Network's coverage today for that 8 o'clock face-off tonight in the Stadium Series game down in Annapolis, Washington, and Toronto. All right, just in the 2 minutes we have before we wrap things up here, guys, not only the game today, but, again, this busy stretch. Tomorrow and Monday, the last time this season that the Bruins will have back-to-back days off here. It's every other day and then some back-to-backs mixed in, including next weekend's home-and-home against Chicago, a couple of afternoon games. What do you look for in the game today from the Bruins and going forward? You got Detroit, you got Philly, two games against Chicago coming up here over the next 8 days.
It's just not to play down to the standings, to where the team is in the standings. I mean, you know, they played Buffalo the other day, and I realized Buffalo beat Tampa as well, and, you know, they've had Buffalo, and Buffalo's had Tampa and the Bruins' number, but, you know, Florida goes and beats Buffalo the other day. Buffalo, they didn't have, you know, Kane, they didn't have Eichel, they didn't have their starting goaltender in, it was all before the deadline, you know, that type of thing. We talk about all the guys that aren't there for Montreal, you know, Pacioretty might not be there, your starting goaltender's not there. Don't play down to the competition. Still, you need to go out and play the game the right way. And if you want to continue to pile up these wins and continue to build a cushion for yourself here in the standings, that's something that you need to continue to do. And, you know, with the business of the schedule and the way things are going to get for Boston, they've built up some that cushion right now. You don't want to let it see it slip away either. You just want to keep the competitive edge and continue to play the game the right way. That's all I'm looking for. Normally we'd be talking all Boston Montreal tonight, right? I mean, but
right.
Because of the standings, you're not doing that right now, but it still is Boston Montreal on a Saturday. I mean, there's still something there to it, I think, anyhow.
I would think there's still going to be a little juice in the building tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, I would think so. Take advantage of the fact that they played last night. Get off to a quick start. That's something that the Bruins have not been able to consistently do here in the last few weeks. So get off to that good start. If Danton Heinen is back in the lineup, let's see how he responds. Let's see who the starting goaltender is tonight, because there's certainly a chance that it could be Anton Hudobin.
All right, remember, early face-off today, 5 o'clock face-off, 4:30 pregame show. Judd and Bob will have the call. Guys, thanks. We'll be listening.
Thanks,
you got
man.
It.
And you guys, I believe, will be at the Garden next Saturday. It's a 1 o'clock face-off, so we'll have you guys from the Garden next Saturday morning, and we hope you will be with us as well here for another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll talk to you then.